Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, I'm Steph, and this is the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast. And it's still the summer holidays. Since getting back from Italy, it's been a bit of a patchwork of clubs, visiting family. Two of the kids are currently with grandparents, so we've survived another week. And I think, like lots of people, I swing between wanting to cherish some of it and just be a bit spontaneous and fun, but also wanting and needing to work and then feeling guilty that I'm wishing the time away or the kids are spending a little bit too much time on screens. And my guest today was really helpful with all of these feelings, and she's actually qualified to help us. So Anna Martha is a psychotherapist, she's got three children, and she's also a best-selling author with three books so far, all aimed at helping mothers. Her passion is taking therapy outside of the therapy room and making it really accessible. She has almost 180,000 followers on Instagram, and she shares techniques and ideas, and sometimes she also just shares how tough she's finding the juggle on her feed. So it's very relatable. But back to the guilt I mentioned, I think in pretty much every episode of this podcast, there's been a mention of mum guilt. So I asked Anna what is the purpose of the guilt, and she talks through how we can show some compassion for ourselves, which gets rid of the shame, which in turn gets rid of the guilt. And it's really helpful because I don't think we've got time to be sitting around just feeling guilty. And this phase of life can feel hard enough, let alone if we're beating ourselves up constantly. And quite often when we don't even really need to, we wouldn't put that on someone else if they were feeling guilty. We'd tell them that they just shouldn't feel that way. So she's really wise. There's loads of ground covered. We talk about relationships and how the row over the dishwasher isn't actually about the dishwasher. What happens when we don't validate our feelings? So instead of being cross or bored, we try to act as if all is wonderful because it seems to be something that mothers feel the need to do. Please let me know what you think of this episode by sharing it, or if you're feeling really kindly, review on iTunes, where we currently have a 5-star rating. And this episode is sponsored by the Glorious Happy Newspaper, which is a platform and quarterly physical newspaper dedicated to celebrating all that's good in the world. We sell it as an option in Don't Buy Her Flowers gift boxes, and it's definitely become more popular with our customers in the last couple of years. I guess when people are looking for a bit more positivity and some inspiration, and they have also kindly given us a discount code for a discount on their products and subscription to the newspaper. So listen up, and we'll share the details during this episode. Right then, to kick off, Anna and I talked a bit about how the summer holidays were going, and I asked if she thought it was easier this year now we've already managed months of the kids at home during the pandemic.
There was an element going to the summer holidays for me where I had to remind myself it wasn't a lockdown, because there was so much about that that I found it incredibly hard. And I would just walk past the printer, which I still can't look straight in the eye.
And get this kind of homeschooling.
Yeah, and just have to remind myself that I'm not stuck at home.
Yeah.
You know, I can do things. I will be able to take the kids out. And we've been going through so much challenge over the last few years with one of my wonderful children who we haven't had like assessments and stuff, but there's a whole level of challenge there around kind of emotional containment or lack thereof, which was really hard in the pandemic. And I think we find it hard to find, and I think loads of families find this, where is routine helpful and where is actually just being able to go with it helpful, and sometimes different children need different things, and that can be a really difficult thing to balance. So I was very nervous about that. So I think, yeah, it was very mixed feelings going into it, but we've done a week now over here and it's feeling, you know, we're doing good. And that's, I actually feel proud of myself.
Five to go.
Well,
and you've got three kids, and then their needs are obviously going to be different as well because they're ages. So your young Florence is three?
Yeah, three.
And then your eldest is seven?
Is seven, and then I've got a six-year-old, six. Yeah, they're completely different needs. The first one, my first child, he always has been pretty textbook. Like, he's quite straightforward, and he lulled me into a very false sense of security. And I was pregnant again by the time he was one. And I had no idea how different they could be.
Yeah.
You have to parent them differently. Well,
you've said that it was your second, that because you found it really hard and you did struggle with anxiety and postnatal depression. And that's what spurred you on to this career, which is all about how, I mean, you obviously were already a psychotherapist, but you've become like a mum whisperer. So it's all about motherhood. And so you've got three books, so Mind Over Mother, Know Your Worth, and the Little Book of Calm, which came out this year. But they're all kind of tools to help give people access to therapy that maybe don't have access, or just to put that into your daily life rather than waiting for your appointment once every couple of weeks or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. I think I started to recognise that there were certain themes in the therapy room that were coming up over the years of being a therapist. And, you know, therapy isn't accessible for everyone, and there are huge waiting lists for people that want to access it by the NHS. And I think my passion was just to hand some of those tools over. So whether it's in the interim and you would like to have therapy, or actually you just want to equip yourself a little bit more and untangle things.
And it's discussion as well, isn't it? So you obviously post a lot on Instagram, and it's like that drip of information and thought and discussion is where we then start having regular conversations about how people are really feeling, rather than it being hidden and tucked away. Because I think it's probably really easy for people to forget how much that's changed in the last like 5-10 years, that you can have a conversation, you can go, I am finding this really hard, compared to maybe the previous generation of women who are now in their kind of 50s, or our parents who felt that they had to put on a show and everything had to be in its place. And maybe their role was more just to mother. It wasn't quite as conflicted as our roles, where we're also trying to do all these other things. And I think that leads into this kind of rush hour overwhelm that I talk about, and I know you talk about, because it's very, very different. It's changed so much.
It certainly has, hasn't it? I think I remember seeing a quote from an article that I'd written that a newspaper had put on their Instagram. And I think it was like, you know, us mums have more challenges in many ways than the generations before us. And then someone had replied saying, I disagree. I think we have it easier, you know, than, because we have more support. And actually, I think it's just so nuanced, isn't it? You know, in some ways, you know, we have more tools available to us, but in other ways, we have more to juggle. We put more pressures on ourselves. We're the generation of, you know, we were kids after the war generation of kind of keep calm, carry on, smile, you know, look on the bright side. And I think we're trying to unpick that, because that hasn't served us well as a, you know, that's a coping mechanism. It's not a sustainable way of living.
Yeah.
So I think we're having to unpick a lot of that kind of outward, I'm fine, I've got this covered, I'm strong, keep calm, carry on.
People still find it awkward as well. Like, if I've had various points in the last couple of years where I struggled. And when you say to someone, I remember I was walking across the rugby pitch, and I think I was dragging Frank. Buster was on the far side. I don't even know where Mabel was. You know, like someone's around. And someone said, oh, how you doing? And I was like, I'm really fucking angry. And I didn't give it any context. I didn't really explain it. And they looked so uncomfortable. But I just was fuming in that moment, because I don't know, life just felt hard and I felt rubbish. And I've had a few times where I've said something like that, or just like, God, I remember after one of the lockdowns, like, that was really, really tough. And then someone goes, oh, I found it okay. Like, they can't handle it almost. Yeah. Yeah. But then that makes you kind of, oh, the guilt and the shame, and that, oh, I'm obviously a shitter parent than them, and all that stuff is difficult.
It is, isn't it? And I think I know in so many ways as a mum, I am incredibly privileged. I have the tools to address certain kind of mental health challenges that I have. You know, I have access to those. I have good friendships. I can access that. And I know that that in a way sometimes is enough. Like on social media, I might get someone saying, because I talk so openly about kind of those just mum emotions. And I know that sometimes we, and I've done this before too, looked at someone else's life and thought, well, it's all right for you though, but look at what you've got. And I remember opening up about my postnatal depression. This was one of those moments where I was so tired, and I was always one of those people that was just kind of wrapped up neatly. Mm-hmm. And that was my way of kind of coping with life. And I remember,
and you've talked quite a lot about that, like that kind of perfectionism, and and that's the shift that you maybe had after your second, that being having to be vulnerable, realizing you had to.
I literally had no choice. And you know, I remember saying to a good friend of mine, oh, I've actually been feeling really low, I've been really struggling. And she said, you know, but look at what you've got, Anna. You've got a lovely husband. Your children. You've got two children, and some
which sometimes works, right?
We need okay both, phase, though. Yeah. And I think, you know, we can be so aware of our privilege, but that should not overrule the human emotion. You know, we can. I think it's so important to have that gratitude. It's so important, but it's also so important to validate our emotional response to what's going on. And I think the pandemic really kind of really embedded that sense of, you know, that gratitude, that positivity. It was a coping mechanism for us, you know, to sit at home and think, I'm so grateful that I'm not going through dark grief at the moment. But then we can so easily use that to devalue our own emotion. You know, I should be grateful. I shouldn't be feeling this way. I shouldn't be feeling overwhelmed because look at so and so.
How does somebody go through that? What's the kind of process of accepting that that's okay and then being able to validate that feeling? And maybe you can't say it to everyone, but like, what do they do?
I think it's really important to be aware that your feelings are just a human response to your circumstances. That's what they are. They're not a statement saying that, you know, I should be feeling a different way. As soon as we start telling ourselves that we should be feeling a different way, we're not valuing that emotion. And then it can
be. And we do it a lot with kids, right? Because we go, like, as soon as you say something shitty about your kids, it's like, oh, I love them. And it's like, oh, we know that bit.
We know that. And I think it's that, it's standing on the truth that I know I love my children. Wouldn't it be great if we just didn't ever have to caveat that?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be such a powerful thing? And you think, well, that foundation. So I literally sometimes when I'm battling with this in myself, and the reason I talk about all of these things is because I'm constantly having to do it to myself too. You know, I haven't got this. It doesn't all come naturally to me. You know, imagine that that foundation is there. What's that foundation? You know you love your child. That's the truth. But then everything else is just something that sits upon that foundation, and that changes and moves, like a bit like fog, you know, fog kind of just, it moves and it changes. And that's the feelings. It's just having a human response to what's going on. We know the truth. You know, we know that that foundation is love. We know that that foundation is gratitude and awareness of some of those privileges that we have. And both things can be true. Like it's that, and it's the, I can feel overwhelmed and grateful. You know,
I can feel overwhelmed and still know that someone else has it a shitter time.
Yeah.
But you don't need to permanently be telling everyone that you're aware of that.
Because who gets to feel like it's like there's a hierarchy of feeling then.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Who is that one person that actually gets to feel overwhelmed? You know, someone will always have it harder than you. Someone will always have it easier than you. And if we're just going to keep playing top trumps with each other, we're going to keep suppressing our feet. You know, we're going to just keep suppressing them, and they're going to come out sideways.
What's the result if you suppress those feet? Because that's ultimately what it's about, isn't it? Because it's like, okay, so we can do that, and lots of us do that all the time. But then what happens if you suppress
it? Comes out sideways. It's like an energy. It's like a wave. You know, if we were just to keep blocking that wave, it starts building up pressure. You can imagine a dam wall. You know, that water is a pressure against the wall. And if, you know, it'll just spurt out. And it happens, you know, it might be in that frustration, that irritability. It might be in resentment at your partner. It might be, you know, things that the words that just come out kind of like knives. And you're like, oh, gosh, I can't believe I just said that. If we're guilting our emotions, you know, we're not having compassion for ourselves, are we? So it might be that you actually find it really hard to look after yourself well because you feel guilt. So when we have guilt that's not addressed, we're going to move to some kind of sometimes it can be quite self-punishing behaviour, the little things that we overlook or the needs that we ignore. And I just think acknowledging and respecting our feelings and not applying too much value to them. Like, it's almost like we want to apply meaning to it. So I feel really bored today, for example, with my kids. Oh my gosh, how can I feel bored? You know, so many people would kill to be in this situation. I'm so lucky. And what do we do with that? We don't address that feeling then. We don't just think, oh, you know what? Sometimes it is a bit boring. And that's just how it is. I know I love them. And that's that foundation.
But all of this for new mums is particularly pertinent because it's that shit, you know, it's such a shift. It's that overnight shift. And what do you see in your work as the biggest, most common challenge for new mums?
Yeah, I think it is the invalidation of some of those really normal human emotions. As if, I don't know if you felt like this, you know, I really wanted to be a mum, and I felt so privileged that I was able to become a mum. And I remember almost like pressuring myself that I should just feel this constant gratitude and joy and love and the nurturing kind of maternal, that kind of archetype that I think we have in our mind. And I was quite shocked to find that I still felt anger and boredom and resentment and kind of missed aspects of my pre-baby life. And you think, actually, sometimes we pressure ourselves that as we walk out of the delivery room or wherever we had the baby, that we lose half of the spectrum of human emotion. We'll get angry and bored and frustrated and lonely, and we will always feel all of those feelings at different times. And I think I really guilted myself for half that spectrum of human emotion because I had a baby, and I think I see that happening quite a lot.
I mean, I massively had rage after each kid, and I think that was a lot of that, which was that invalidation of feeling. I was feeling all these things. I was feeling anxious. I was feeling overwhelmed and all that stuff, and Doug didn't feel that a lot of the time. And I think we've talked, you know, now we have a different understanding of that, and that whole thought, that idea behind invalidation in your relationship and how important that is. But I think that's probably where there's so many clashes for couples when you have a baby, because you haven't had to think about that before.
Yeah. And if you're not feeling heard in your relationship, but then you're also not hearing yourself, that's like a double whammy, isn't it? It's a double whammy.
Yeah, because I couldn't work out what. So I thought it was all because of Doug.
Yes, it is easier to place it all somewhere.
He's a prick. Yeah, yeah. Rather than actually, I'm frustrated. Like, even saying this now, I'm probably realizing something for the first time. I'm frustrated because I did enjoy my work and I'm at home and my body feels a wreck and I haven't got the friendships around me that I had and could get to so easily when I could meet someone and all that stuff. Yeah. And it was all directed at poor old, he did make some fuck ups, but overall he's a good guy. And that's what was happening.
Yeah. Our brains like doing that though. It's called displacement. So, and this is a way that these emotions come out sideways. So, you know, I might feel overwhelmed, frustrated. I might have some different emotions going on, and then the cereal box falls out the cupboard and you know, it makes me lose
everything,
you know,
goes.
I lose. And you think, is it really about the cereal box, or is it, you know, is that cereal box an opportunity to direct all of these feelings at something? Because actually it's almost easier for it to be about that than it is to acknowledge that actually it might be about things that I can't change. And I think a lot of motherhood is about coming to terms with things. And I remember this desperation almost for Tara and my husband to feel what I felt as a mum, and this kind of anger that he doesn't know what it feels like. Yes, he's amazing with the children, but normally I'm around, or it's kind of short, it's a half a day on a weekend, you know. He doesn't have that kind of run of days and challenge in the preschool, you know, that rushing time of the day where you're trying to just get everyone out and one of the kids is probably having endless tantrums and trying to manage that and just looking around for the adult and realizing that you're the only one, you know. And it's hard. And I remember thinking, I just want you to know what it feels like so that you will see me. And he's like, I can see, but he will never know what it feels like to be me.
No,
never.
And I don't think in that moment I think I could explain it better now to Doug, but I couldn't then because I didn't even really understand what was happening. I think one of our guests before, Matt Frey, and I think I've heard you talk about it, is this idea of consideration that a mum, almost as soon as the baby arrives or even before when you're pregnant, there's so many people to consider and so many things to consider. So, and you're always thinking about, like, have they got snack? Have they got enough clothes? Have they got enough sleep? Do they need more sleep? Have they had too much sleep? Have they stimulated enough? Like this massive long list of stuff, as well as considering your friendships and your family and siblings and, I don't know, how's the house? How's the... There's this whole massive long list of stuff that Doug just didn't feel like... And I don't think, and these are generalizations, but from all the conversations I've had, men don't have that same, like, the bit that I couldn't explain about having babies, and I didn't understand before having babies, was how much I felt every missed opportunity to sleep for them and for me. Every thing, whenever they were sad or upset, or I felt like I'd done it wrong, or like how much I really felt that in my whole being, and it could ruin your day, or it could lift your day if it went well. And Doug did not have that, like 100% didn't have that. And there is a period, I guess, when you have small kids, where a woman, I think, does give herself over. And that's okay, because I suppose you don't want it to feel like you shouldn't be and you should be battling on, because that's the opposite of equality anyway, if we're just supposed to just keep doing everything as well as doing this massive thing. Yeah. It's so complicated, though, to get your head round, because I don't think you can until it's happening or even after it's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that was part of the coming to terms for me, was that I remember in an argument being like, I just want you to know what it is like. And he said, I will not, because I cannot be you. And it was like this light bulb moment of, I want something I'm never going to get. So how can we work out a way that I'm feeling heard within it all? What can we do? What can we put in place? And how can we keep having those conversations along the way?
And because to do that when you're tired and you've just had baby, it's impossible. Like, it's relationship another
admin
work.
Task, isn't it? It's another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We always say, like, we would just had to survive those first few years. And that sounds a bit depressing, but there wasn't much reflection at that point, like, in it. We didn't have the capacity to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, for me, it's just speaking out in the moment and recognizing what is the story beyond the irritation. So it might be like, you didn't empty the dishwasher. I can feel that frustration. And I might say, you know, you didn't empty the dishwasher. And because of that, I feel like your assumption is that I'll do it. And then he can talk back to that. But I think if I just leave it at that irritation, what can you do with that? Because then there's defensiveness. And I just think if you can acknowledge the story that you're telling yourself beyond that, it doesn't, you know, normally it doesn't take long to think, actually, why am I annoyed? What's the feeling? It's that I feel that there's an assumption there that I'll do it. And then that makes me angry.
Which is a big deal, right? Because that whole loss of identity piece in that first year or so, where... you know, all the things that previously made you, a lot of them aren't there. And so then if your partner is almost adding to that, no wonder we're so pissed off with them.
Because it's like, you know, it's that mothering that requires so much of us. And then I think if there is any element of feeling like I'm having to mother
him,
then there's an instant feeling of overwhelm and resentment that comes up in me.
Which I think is also confusing to look at it from their point of view for a moment, and then we'll move on. But it's confusing for them because, actually, like I've said before, prior to having kids, I did mother Doug to a degree. Like, we were in the home and I was slipping into more of a traditional role and I would be doing stuff and I kind of took pride in that and making him his fucking packed lunch and all that stuff. And then it was like, I can't do that for you anymore because I've also got this. And it's too much. So they're sitting there going, whoa, what's changed here?
Where's my
lunch?
That
needs to be, you can make it yourself.
Yes,
but that needs to be a conversation. I didn't really know that that's what I was doing at the time.
Yeah, it's that recognition, isn't it? And thinking, what's going on here? And because I think it's such a common dynamic in relationships where the woman can feel like she's parenting the partner. in any way. And that resentment can just, you know, it's a very powerful thing, resentment, especially unaddressed resentment, because we create stories in our minds about why that's happening and what that means. It's almost quite emasculating, isn't it? It's like, you're another child and I don't want to feel like you're another child, but how do we work that out when perhaps I have been parenting you previously? And it's just these conversations that can be really hard, and just coming out with the stories that we've been telling ourselves about it, so that we can fill in some.
It's really interesting, because I've had messages from gay women who have children who've said that it is very different, and probably not for everyone, but the messages I've had have been like, they don't have those traditional roles to play to that maybe you do if you're in a heterosexual relationship.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? And I think it's
sounds
also
way more appealing. But
it does. It definitely does have an appeal to it. But I think, sometimes we, beyond the actual relationship and the roles that we've fallen into, we sometimes need to address our own sense of, how do we feel handing things over? How do we feel asking for help? How do we feel saying, actually, this isn't okay for me? Because for so many years, I felt like I had my own rules for myself. You know, I should be able to do everything around the kids because I'm the mum. This is what I should be able to do. If I don't have capacity, then that's my lacking.
And that's what you've seen, right? That's what you've learned.
And it's
not just through your own upbringing. It's through every film, series, book, pretty much until recently.
And we need to address this. And we need to address this, I think, even before we can start having some of these conversations, because what are those narratives that are holding us back from even accepting the support that's actually in front of us? So I remember, you know, when my middle child, he was so he had undiagnosed silent reflux. He basically screamed for 9 months of his life. Oh, I was so sleep deprived, I would hallucinate. I should never have been behind the wheel of a car. It was just awful, basically. It was awful. And I remember, even in the midst of all of that, my husband, I sent him upstairs to this bedroom. It didn't even have a door because it was kind of like a attic conversion room, because he was working. So I was like, you need your sleep. You have to have your sleep. I have to be able to do this. And I have to be able to do it on my own because I'm the mum. And this was just a narrative that I had. And it was almost excruciating when anyone offered any help. I felt a deep sense of failure. Like, they can see that I can't do it. Them even offering help felt like a really big insult to me. I think only when I really hit rock bottom with that and I realized that I couldn't do it all, and that wasn't my failing, it was just my human limit and the circumstances, it's too much. And I think that's it sometimes. And Zoe Blasky says this so beautifully, you know, the reason it's hard is because it's not because we're failing. You know, we need people. And you know, the difference, I think, I had a real moment at the beginning of the summer holidays. My husband said, would you like me to take some Fridays off through the summer holidays? And previously, I would have been like, no, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't. Yeah. But I was just like, yeah, anything you can give me, please, please take it off. And, you know, I think
and everyone benefits, because then you
everyone
feel like a
benefits.
Team and then you're less resentful. And then,
yeah. But sometimes I think we need to address our own stories around what we should be able to manage.
Which again is confusing for your partner if you're making demands, but equally sweeping up everything behind them. And then it's like, well, so which do you want? Like, I think you have to be willing to let them fuck up.
Oh, yes.
And do it in their way.
Yes.
And that's taken, like, what, my eldest is 11. It's taken us years to get to that. It's not something that happens overnight. But realizing, like, if I just keep doing this and I keep crushing him every time he doesn't, going, you've not done it right, he's not going to do it. And then I'm just in the same place I was at the beginning.
Yeah, so if a water bottle, for example, is forgotten, what's going to have to happen? He's just going to have to go home, grab one. You know, we soon realize that it's useful to remember certain things.
You know, I think
we just, well, yeah, you hope.
A quick interruption to tell you about our sponsors of this episode, The Happy Newspaper. It's a hugely refreshing twist on news. They report positive changes and people doing excellent things who deserve to be recognised. And it's a blooming sunny publication and platform. And they also have some lovely initiatives, like for every 2 subscribers, they send out a newspaper to a UK school. And if you'd like to subscribe, they're offering an exclusive Don't Buy Her Flowers discount, which you can also use against their products. The code is thehappynews10, that's thehappynews10, which you can use up until the 12th of September. And go to thehappynewspaper.com to view their products and subscriptions and to use the code.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I remember I had appendicitis when I was pregnant. I had to have it taken out, and I was in hospital for 4 days, and I'd never left my son this long. And I remember thinking, right, how's everything going to get done? How's everything going to be remembered? But it's amazing how a lot of the balls that we're juggling are quite bouncy. So if that nap time's missed, or we didn't go down at that specific time, or didn't eat
well,
that
and you're not there
thing,
for the right? So he, if anything, that might mean that your partner sees that if they didn't have that nap, later on is a fucking nightmare. So the next day maybe they do it in a better, or the way that you've kind of said this actually works.
I really thought the world would fall apart if I stepped out of that role for a few days, and I had no choice to. And it was really interesting because the house might have been a bit messier than I would have liked when I got home. My kid might have been a bit tireder than I would have liked, but actually, you know, the main things were okay. And I think sometimes we apply such equal value to things that really matter, and also to things that actually, if that ball's dropped,
it doesn't matter.
You know, if I forget a friend's birthday, if I forget that party or double bit that, does it really matter in the grand scheme of things? And it's like,
but
we're just
applying.
But do
you think that that's something that comes as well with experience? So when you're like, we both with our third kids were way, way, way kinder to ourselves. It took to the third ones to go, oh, so we do need help and we can take help. In fact, we can book some help. And then also my expectations are so much lower of what we can handle as a family, like what and what we can get done and what we need to do in a day or whatever.
And I think a lot of it is about recognizing, come to terms with the fact that we're limited, we have limits, and that isn't failure. That's human, and addressing people pleasing, which has been completely life changing for me and lots of the people that I work with. Because a lot of this, you know, it comes out of that. Well, I can't say no to that.
And we've just had a holiday where they could swim and we could.
Did you read a book?
I read four books.
Ah,
four. And then, and like, I couldn't have dreamed of that like a few years ago. Yeah. But I think, but even then, like, I just wanted to talk about guilt actually, because when we were away, we took iPads and whatever, and they had this little hookup thing so that all three of them could put their headphones into one screen, which I really like, because then you feel a bit less neglectful.
They're all into it. They're all in it together.
Together, exactly. Although finding something that a 4-year-old and 11-year-old likes is a challenge, but mostly Frank just watches stuff that's really inappropriate for a 4-year-old. But I like, the kids just wanted to be at the pool. We had a villa, we had a pool. They just wanted to be there, especially the first few days. Everyone's knackered. And Doug and I would be like, right, well, we should go to the beach. We should be that guilt, you know. And it was like, everyone's happy. We were happy. We're all sitting down. They're watching a bit of screen time. They would be watching way more if we were at home, and they wouldn't be. And it's so funny how you flip to the guilt.
Yeah.
Of of every fucking scenario.
Oh, and then those shoulds that came in. We should be doing stuff. We should be getting out. And it kind of stifles what's actually happening.
Yeah, which everyone's really happy.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I literally ask myself that in the moment, you know, if it's good, why change it? Mm-hmm. What if this, you know, when we think back to summer holidays when we were young, I remember, so my mum was a physio, and I remember I used to go to work with her some of the days when she was working the summer holidays, and my brother and I used to sit in the waiting room and play with the crutches. Like, that's what we did.
Wouldn't have even been an iPad.
No, but it's almost like this pressure that we're placing on ourselves takes us out of the very situation that's actually okay.
Mm. And it's a pressure that I'm guessing we're going to be passing on to our kids, right, where they need to be permanently entertained.
Yeah. So in those moments, I think just thinking, what's that narrative? What am I telling myself that we should do? And is what is happening okay?
Mm.
Like, are people all right? Is everyone fairly content? If so, why change it?
So what's the guilt about? Why? What's it meant to tell us? I know we get it confused, but what's it meant to tell us?
So I always say, don't let guilt shame you, because if you're feeling guilty and you don't address it, you know, we can then slip into, I'm not a good enough mum, I'm not doing enough with them, we're meant to be making memories, I'm not, you know, I'm failing at that, I should blah, blah, blah. You know, and we can then end up shaming ourselves. And when we shame ourselves, then our self-esteem is affected. We're less likely to do those things that are caring and nurturing to ourselves that we need so much. And it just becomes that spiral. Our critical internal dialogue picks up. So I always say, always let guilt prompt you, not shame you. When you feel guilty, see it as a little red flag that pops up and it's alerting you to something. And then I've got this little technique that I created for myself.
ACT.
My ACT technique.
Go on, I love it.
I just do these things, you know, selfishly because I need them as well. And then I share them. So I just remember thinking, is this it? And this actually was in lockdown and there was just so much guilt. And I thought, this is not good. Like, this cannot be my life now, just with this undercurrent of kind of shame and guilt. So the ACT is address, compassion, tweak. So imagine holding a piece of coal in your hand and just looking at it and thinking, what is this guilt that I'm feeling? So kind of look at it objectively and think, I am feeling guilty that we are on holiday and all my three kids are on their screens. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it. That's what I'm feeling guilty about. See, compassion, bring some compassion into it, because shame cannot exist in that same space as compassion. What compassion can you bring in? You know, Steph, this is your holiday too. They're all happy. You know, this is what holidays are actually about. You know, you're doing a good job. They're enjoying being
busy.
Together.
Life is so busy.
Slow down. This is your break.
Term time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so that's the compassion. Think about how you'd reassure a friend if you find that hard. And then the tweak is, if guilt is there to prompt you, not shame you, what is it prompting you to do? So in this situation, it might be that at lunchtime you say, right, do you feel like doing anything this afternoon? You know, what if we did something, what might that be? Or do you actually just need to chill today? You know, it might just be that kind of that intervention of offering another option or deciding to do something fun the next day that takes you out of that where you're staying. So just, yeah, how can you act on it? And then you can put that bit of coal down and you've addressed that. It can't
And it's the
anymore.
Idea that with the compassion, so because sometimes, especially I think for women and this whole mum guilt thing, it's not even warranted guilt, right?
Yeah.
Like if it's guilt about
unjustified
putting my child
guilt.
In nursery to go to work, well, where else are you going to put them? And what so that's where it gets really complicated, isn't it? Because it's a guilt that I guess, again, it goes back to like we have this expectation of ourselves as mothers, which is based on a life that none of us are leading. I think something like majority of women, I think the average number of hours women work paid or unpaid is like 20 hours a week compared to a couple of generations ago where it was very, very different. Yeah. And so you're trying to fit more in. It's completely unwarranted guilt.
It is. So I always, you know, when I'm working with clients and they might be carrying guilt for years and blaming themselves for something that wasn't about fault.
Mm.
And I wonder sometimes whether under this guilt is kind of loss or grief or sadness sometimes. You know, it's easier to feel angry with ourselves and blame ourselves than just to allow ourselves to feel sad or recognize a loss, because it's not as active. We can't do anything about that. It's just about acceptance, whereas frustration is much more of an active feeling. So sometimes it might be, you know, I work with mums that didn't have the birth that they wanted, mm-hmm. and they feel so much guilt. And that isn't justified mm-hmm. guilt. That isn't their guilt to carry. And it might be that actually instead of that guilt, is there a little grief to journey through, because there was a loss there. They had a dream, they had a desire, and it didn't go that way. So actually, maybe it's easier sometimes to be cross with ourselves than it is to feel sad.
When that goes back to your point about suppressing, you haven't validated the original feeling, yeah. which was that you wanted to grieve, or you didn't get the birth that you wanted. So now it's coming out as something else further yeah. down the line, because you haven't dealt with it.
Yeah, and we see it with kids. You know, we see that if they're upset about something, or if they're having a tantrum, and we're just like, be quiet, stop it, you know, just trying to kind of stop it.
Doesn't
how
work.
Effective is that? You know, if we're oh, actually... if
we had one this morning because we didn't have enough cereal selection.
Exactly.
I properly lost it.
But when you know what that's about, you can meet that need, or you can just at least talk. You haven't got the cereal, but at least you can talk about the fact that it's really sad.
We are going to get
that. We haven't got the cereal.
We will get the cereal. We discussed what we will get. That was the main issue. We needed to know it was coming.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we just layer it out with this frustration that we're feeling the way that we're feeling, and then we feel guilt about it, we feel shame about it.
I think you had an episode with Catherine, is it Ormerod?
Yeah.
So she posted on her Instagram about that of 52 weeks of the year, she has 2 weeks off yes. with her partner where they go on holiday or whatever. And that might be split over however many weekends or whatever. And I remember reading that and being like, whoa, that's bold. But actually... And she doesn't feel guilty about it. That was the key bit. She doesn't feel guilty about it. But actually, 2 weeks of the year, if you split that up into a couple of weekends, maybe a wedding, whatever, however you do it, it's really not that much time that you get to be with your partner and not your kids. And she's leaving them with family, so they're getting that experience and those connections and all that stuff. It was interesting because you talked about how our generation feels like we should be nurturing all the time. And maybe this is the difference between, you know, that idea of like, we've never had it so good and all that stuff. It's like, but we've put ourselves into this position where we feel like we need to be nurturing and learning and helping, and because we have the big awareness of psychology, maybe,
yeah,
that our parents didn't have. And I used to watch Neighbours twice a day, like, you know, I can remember not being permanently entertained.
Yeah,
it was almost like what she was saying about not feeling guilty. It was really bold.
Oh,
it's like, well, that's what we have to get to, surely.
Yeah.
Just to go, no, I'm not going to feel it.
Yeah. I feel a huge amount less mum guilt than I have ever felt in my life. And I think it's because so many of the things I felt guilty around, and sometimes still do, I have to coach myself through it. I recognize the value of them now. You know, I used to feel guilty sitting on the sofa in the daytime. I remember literally once Taryn coming home from work and I catapulted off the sofa because I felt like almost embarrassed to be seen to be resting, when actually now I recognize the value of that so much so. And I did this little reel the other day, and I was on the exercise bike and the TV was on from Topsy and Tim. I wish they'd make more flipping episodes. I'm sick of them. And Florence was watching the TV, and you know, I would have felt so guilty about that at one point, even the thought of it. And I was just thinking, I use what I can to get what I need to give them what they deserve. There are lots of things that I love doing that when I'm doing it, it is a gift to my children that I am prioritizing that in that moment, because it is giving me something more to give them.
Mm.
But also it's, you know, on the flip side, it's giving me something more for the sake of the fact that I am a human being and I deserve to do things that feel nice for me as well.
This leads into your light bulb moment that you've put on your Therapy Edits podcast this week, which was that we set the bar for our children's well-being with the way we set it for our own.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Oh my gosh, that was such a big one for me. Mm-hmm. It was like a punch to the stomach, because I think I'm not alone in, at some point, believing that to be a mum is to kind of give yourself away, like sacrificially. This mm-hmm. is what I do now. I am all about my child. I'm all
selfless.
About meeting their needs.
Yeah.
I, you know, mine goes to the bottom of the pile, and that is what love is. Mm-hmm. Like love is based, this is love, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what happened to me from doing that so continuously, especially through some of the challenges that we've been through, was that I ended up resentful, burnt out, irritable, depressed,
had absolutely no capacity for even laughing because
no personality.
Yeah, we need, that's it, no personality. We need energy to laugh.
Did you find that, because I definitely had this, I can remember laughing in the kitchen with Doug when the kids were like a bit older and both of us doing like a step back, like, fuck, what noise just came out?
What is this?
Because I just hadn't laughed, which is really sad. And that's, and I don't mean that I was miserable all the time, but just like you said, the energy to really laugh, to giggle at something. And I fucking love laughing. Giggling, I especially love laughing when you're not supposed to laugh. That's my favourite. Like when you get chronic giggles.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Like at school. But like that, that, like, I didn't even have that in me.
No, well, you don't. You know, we don't have the, it takes energy to rationalise anxious thoughts. It takes energy, as we were talking earlier, to have those conversations with your partner about, wait a minute, what's actually going on about the dishwasher? Is it really about the dishwasher, or is it that I'm just feeling angry and misunderstood? Or, you know, and it takes energy to have those conversations. And I think I thought that to love well was to give myself completely away. But then I had nothing left. And I was quick to, you know, I could read, we can read all the books about parenting. We can get all the tools. But if we are completely and utterly depleted and burnt out, we cannot access them because we are in fight or flight. So in moments of challenge, our stress response kicks in. We're not then thinking, wait a minute, what was that thing I read that would be really helpful in this moment? We cannot access that. So what comes out is often that stress response. It might be that reaction, that shouting, you know, that's something that is probably going to feed that guilt moments later.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to realize that doing those things that give me something back of myself is actually, it is a gift to my children.
Did it feel alien though when you first did it?
Oh, yeah. Massively uncomfortable. Like, I remember at my lowest point, my husband literally drove me to David Lloyd, and it's kind of like this gym and this pool and everything, and I do really like swimming. He was like, for the love of God, will you just come here sometimes and just do swimming or just do something? And I found it excruciating. I found it physically difficult doing that for myself. And I think I put Oscar in the creche or something, and I felt awful. It was so,
and you're looking around at other people too, going, do they feel this? How come they can do it and they don't feel this? And actually probably they feel the same.
Yeah And it was something I really had to kind of just become better at, saying, you know what, I just need to go on a walk. And my husband often will say, can you just go on a walk now, please? Can you just go and do something, please? Because I'm getting that gap between being able to access the stuff that we want to access in the moments that we need it, those tools, you know, whether it's to do with anxiety or kind of parenting responses, we have to get that gap back for ourselves.
If you are constantly giving and giving, your kids are seeing that, and so then what are they going to do when they become parents or when they become adults? And there's a it's on her Instagram, but it's a Glennon Doyle clip. And I share it fairly regularly because I have to go back to it, because I almost have to re-listen to it. You know, you're like, I've got it. And she talks about that lots of people are saying to, like, how can I live my life when I'm worrying about my children and my parents and my family and all this stuff? And she's like, you're going to worry anyway.
Like, what if we worried about setting an example for those kids that meant they didn't get to live either because they were copying what we're doing? What if we worried about not modeling a full human joyful life that they one day will be able to recreate? Like, what if we just took the worry and switched it in a way that gave us permission to live as well as other people permission to live? Because I just am telling you, like, I just know from my own life that there is this thing that happens when you stop believing that a good woman or a good mother or a good wife or a good daughter or a good, just buries herself, just doesn't live, just refuses to have desires, just refuses to have dreams, refuses to have feelings, refuses to have humanity. When you stop believing that and you instead decide, no, like, a woman does get to have dream, ambition, desire, feeling, intuition, juiciness, all of it.
And I really love it because she also says, like, at first, if you do it, there'll be a shit show. And yeah. I feel like we've had that, like, where we're rowing because Doug's like, well, we can't do this. And we, you know, and I'm asking him to do more. And I'm saying, I can't do that. Or I'm going off to Stroud to my warehouse and he's left, you know, picking up the pieces. And then I come back and it's chaos. And we're having to work that out, right? And we're getting somewhere. But he's like, if you can get through that storm, then everyone is happier.
Yeah.
And you get permission to live and you're giving your family permission to live. And I just think that is, and it's the same thing that you're saying. We set that bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so powerful.
It's powerful and terrifying. And, you know, one of the biggest questions I get asked as a therapist is, how can I not pass my anxiety on to my child? How can I not pass my people pleasing on? How can I?
Yeah.
And it's all about what can we do so they don't have to go through that.
First, right?
Well, this is it. This is the most powerful thing that we can ever give to our children is the gift of them seeing us, you know. How not to pass your anxiety onto your child is to address it yourself, because you deserve to address it for the sake of you as well. You know, often the motivation is improving stuff for them when actually they're looking to us. We are the pilot of this plane, and we can say, you can imagine if there's turbulence and the pilot is going, guys, don't worry about it. It's fine. Don't worry about it. You know, are we going to be like, oh, yeah, okay. I feel really safe now.
Safe. Yeah.
No, but actually, if that pilot has a real confidence and knows what they're doing, then, you know, we're just going to sense that too. So we can be saying to our kids, it's all right. You don't need to worry about that. You don't. But actually, if we are a ball of anxiety.
Yeah.
That we can't
and
say
that's
that.
What all experts say, right? Like if you're if you are all those things, that's what they're picking up on.
Yeah.
More so than what you're telling them that they should be doing.
But I think a lot of us fear that our children will feel and have to deal with some of the same challenges that we've had to be working through. And you know what? There's an element of they will have different challenges and they might have some similar things. And you know, we all pass messy stuff onto our kids. That is an inevitable part of being human.
Human. But and it's also that idea that if they don't have to have any resilience when they're younger, they never have to sit in a physio reception and entertain themselves, and they never have to wait to be picked up because they've got to go to after school club, or they never, like, all those things, then their just needs are met every time before they've even got there. Then of course they won't have any resilience. I've got a friend who's doing training to do therapy, and she has realized lots of this stuff of her own, like, childhood, and that she didn't realize, but that resilience was lacking, but because she had wonderful parents who did everything for her. And now she's like, but shit, that's why all these things went wrong, because I didn't know what to do. Which can make you feel better about some of the fuck-ups, right?
Absolutely. You know, we so fear failing our children that we are actually failing them in not allowing ourselves to fail them. Does that make sense? We worry.
Yeah,
we put so much pressure on ourselves. And actually, one of the most amazing things we can do is fail our children and then do the resolution thing after. You know, that is such a powerful learning experience. So I can have a morning and everything just goes to pot. And I shout and I scream. And then I can either just completely guilt and shame myself for that, literally wait to pick up the kids and come armed with, like, loads of treats out of by way of apology. Or I can take a moment and just apologize to them and say, I'm so sorry, mummy had really big feelings. I should not have done that shouting, but I did. And sometimes this is just what we do as humans, but I'm trying to get some, you know, I should have gone and done some breathing. Or it's just about talking them through it so that they go through that process with
easier.
You.
This gets easier as they get older. Like if I say to, but if I lose it, or Doug and I have a row or something like that, we can have that conversation, Buster and Mabel, and they're old enough to compute that, especially like at 11. And that's really reassuring when you get to that point, because just you know, when they're younger and you're like, 4-year-old, are they going to get what I'm saying? Are they going to, whereas I think that's another thing that does get slightly easier.
And then they see, you know, they see the safety restored.
Yeah.
But I think the more we're able to kind of validate and value our own emotional responses to what's going on for what it is. I love the phrase that someone else's broken leg doesn't make your stub toe hurt any less.
Yeah.
You're still going to feel sad or in pain. So just accept it for what it is. Yeah. Know that those emotions will change. I think sometimes we really fear that if we actually let ourselves feel sad or upset about that, we'll never feel okay again. We'll somehow be swimming around in that emotion forever and won't be able to cope.
Well, and the phase that we're in that we're talking about in the podcast is about this rush hour. And what do you do? What's the best way to kind of mitigate it for you personally?
So I always go to think about the need that's there. Like, what need in this overwhelm, what need is there? Is it that I need a hug? I need some space. Sometimes it's literally that I'm actually hungry and I've just overlooked some of those really basic needs and I'm depleted. So therefore I'm not able to cope with what is happening in the moment as well. It might be that I just need to talk or rant. And then I think, well, how can I get some of that now, even in the smallest possible way? So not to overlook the small things. So I think that's often what we do. We're like, oh my gosh, I need like a week in a quiet room, but I can't get that. How can I whittle it down to something so small that I can have a little bit of that now? You know, can I literally just close my eyes for 20 seconds and give myself a little bit of sensory deprivation and a sense of space, you know, just to give me a little bit of something, so I'm acknowledging that and then thinking, how can I plan maybe later down the line or later today to get a bit more of that? So I think it's just about acknowledging, for me, what need is there. Am I feeling like it's like going
and
into
this is the book, right?
So yeah,
it takes you full circle. So the little book of calm, it's got a range of emotions in it basically, or feelings. And so you've got in there like depressed, don't feel good enough, envious, sensitive to noise, self-care. So it's like a reference book, right?
So grab it, read those feelings and see which slots in like a jigsaw piece. Or
no, it's brilliant. I think it's just all so important, because I don't know any person who's become a parent that hasn't felt all these things. So I think what you're doing is excellent, Anna.
Oh, thanks, Bear. I think what you're doing is excellent.
No, but thank you so much for talking to me. And I think there's just so much in there that would be really helpful. Massive thank you, Anna. Honestly, there were some things in that conversation where the penny was dropping as we were talking. And some of this was about things I felt when my eldest was a baby, so more than 11 years ago, especially the stuff about feeling one emotion and reacting in a certain way, but it's actually something else going on, but you haven't quite realised what that is. There is a link to Anna's books and her Instagram in the notes for this episode. Thank you again to The Happy Newspaper for sponsoring this episode, as well as sharing good news, which I think we could all do with. And please get in touch with me at podcast@don'tbuyherflowers.com. Let me know if you've got any guests you think we should get on or subjects we should cover. I would love to hear from you. And good luck. We have camping trips coming up, so I'll let you know how that goes. Obviously, I'm really looking forward to it. Take care.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.